This is The Takeaway. I'm Tanzina Vega, filling in this week. Thanks for listening. This weekend, President Trump seemingly cast doubt over the Me Too movement. In a tweet, he said, quote, "People's lives are being shattered and destroyed by a mere allegation. Some are true and some are false. Some are old and some are new. There is no recovery for someone falsely accused. Life and career are gone. Is there no such thing any longer as due process?" The president's tweet comes after White House Staff Secretary Rob Porter resigned over allegations of domestic abuse by his ex-wives. The president's reaction on Friday?
It was very sad when we heard about it, and certainly he's also very sad. Now, he also, as you probably know, he says he's innocent, and I think you have to remember that. He said very strongly yesterday that he's innocent. So you'll have to talk to him about that, but we absolutely wish him well.
It's not the first time the president has defended men accused of sexual abuse or harassment. He's also supported Roy Moore, Roger Ailes, Bill O'Reilly, Corey Lewandowski, and Steve Bannon, all after allegations of sexual assault surfaced.
He totally denies it. He says it didn't happen. And, you know, you have to listen to him also.
President Trump said, "I think he's a person I know well. He is a good person."
They're saying these horrible things about him. It's very sad because he's a very good person.
And at least 19 women have accused the president of harassment or abuse, including his first wife, Ivana, who said in a sworn deposition that he forced himself on her. For our next guest, the latest sexual abuse scandal to come out of the White House hits very close to home. Karen St. James says she can relate to Rob Porter's ex-wives, both of whom alleged abuse, and one who had a photo of herself with a black eye. Karen is not her real name, but she used it to chronicle her story of verbal and emotional abuse, which she says is not only invisible to others, but also debilitating.
Well, the blog that I read was the one that said why I stayed. And I think when you're in an abusive type situation, first of all, you can't. It took a long time for me to accept that that's what it was. And you justify reasons as to why he's acting a certain way, and you try to accommodate.
Karen said she read a blog post written by Rob Porter's ex-wife, Jenny Willoughby, where Willoughby detailed a marriage full of verbal and emotional abuse. And she understood.
It is extremely hard to accept that you are being abused. You don't, you know. I think I wrote in my blog, you know, we're educated people and we lived in a high class neighborhood and this doesn't happen. You know, I was behind all those scenarios of believing abuse is just, you know, low income people and abuse is just physical. So I refused to believe that that's what it was.
And in your case, when the abuse, which wasn't physical, it was verbal abuse, started, did you immediately understand what was happening, or it took you quite a while to sort of understand it or admit that this was actually happening?
No, it took me a long time to understand what was going on. He, at the time when it started to escalate, there was a health issue with him, basically. And so I just thought he was upset about that, and he was trying to get well, and he was trying to get me to help him. And once he got better, everything would be fine. But that didn't happen, and I kept trying to find out ways to help him, and I kept looking on the internet, like, you know, my husband's so angry, what should I do about it? And verbal abuse kept coming up, and I kept, like, just skipping past it because I was like, you know, he's wonderful sometimes, you know, he can be very loving and charming and everything. So I just kind of ignored it until I think the one time I finally opened it, like, oh, I'm going to open this because this isn't true, and I just want to get this off my radar, basically. And when I read it, I was dumbfounded because I was like, everything was hitting the mark and telling me that I was being abused.
Karen, I also want to bring Julie Goldscheid into this. Julie is a CUNY law school professor who works on issues of gender violence. Julie, how difficult can it be to recognize when you're in an abusive relationship?
So even sometimes when it's physical, it can be hard to recognize and hard to identify because there are so many biases and so many societal forces and psychological forces that lead us to want to think everything's okay, everything's going to be okay. Relationships are very complicated. Abusive relationships are particularly complicated. And people often have a mix of feelings that can make it hard to figure out what course to take.
And I'm wondering, based on what Karen is saying, there's also this sort of idea that it could never happen to me, right? We're educated and we live in a good home and we're a happy couple. And that sort of doesn't always apply.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, we know that abuse affects people of all classes, of all races. And like I said, there are a lot of biases that play into how people experience it. It's true also that there are factors such as poverty that can make abuse more prevalent, that can exacerbate how hard it is to cope with it.
Karen, I want to come back to you. When you tried to tell friends about what was happening to you, did they believe you or were they skeptical because they didn't see any physical wounds or visible wounds?
I really haven't. I mean, I'm still, even though I have left the situation, I really haven't opened up to many people about it because I was too afraid, especially when I was in it. People always saw the facade that he was portraying, that he was this, you know, successful business person. You know, we'd go out to dinner, he would always pay and, you know, tip generously and give extravagant gifts and things like that. So people never saw it. Since I have left, I really just say, well, things just weren't good. He was very controlling. He became obsessed with money. I did finally confess to one group of friends, and the husband in it is still having a hard time with it. And his words were, well, it's hard for me because I haven't seen it with my own eyes, which just crushed me. It's hard because I think you feel with abuse, the onus is on you to prove that you're being abused verbally and emotionally and psychologically and all that stuff. And it's really hard to describe what it's like when you're in it.
And you reference, Karen, the hashtag Maybe He Doesn't Hit You, which was created by Zaira Kelly, who tweets under the handle Bad Dominicana. What was it about that hashtag that sort of resonated with you in your situation?
It showed all the different ways that they abuse you, I guess. Simple terms as that is that they slowly isolate you from your family. They slowly isolate you from your friends. When the front door closes, you know, they're a monster. But just reading all the accounts of women of saying, like, you know.
You just felt connected to other women sharing similar stories.
And that's so common. Many researchers and experts talk about domestic violence and intimate partner violence in terms of coercion and control. And it's that pattern of coercion and control and economic control and jealousy and threats that really describes the nature of the problem. I don't want to say even more than physical abuse, but when you compound that with physical abuse, and it often leads to physical abuse, it's really, really harmful. So we tend to think about intimate partner violence just in terms of the physical abuse, but it's really much more than that.
And also, it's something that there's this term that gets batted around, due process. The president just used that term in his tweet. We hear a lot about due process, but let's really explain what this is. Yeah. What exactly does due process mean?
So you're absolutely right that due process gets thrown around in a lot of contexts. So due process as a legal matter means the constitutional promise that the state won't deprive someone of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. And what that really refers to is basic notions of fairness. The idea that you should get notice of complaints against you and the opportunity to make your case before you're subjected to punishment or have some property right taken away or have some other important interest taken away. So as a legal term, it really refers to something that can be taken away by the state. So we think of it most commonly in the criminal context where, of course, liberty is at stake. And it's really important to respect due process. And we have various procedural protection put in place, particularly in the criminal justice system, because liberty interests are so important. But due process comes into play in other contexts as well.
I'm wondering if, because the way you're describing it sounds like it's sort of being conflated with slander or libel, right, at this point, where if there's someone who's accused and it's a very public accusation and this is a well-known person, that suddenly people are calling for due process, but I think what they really mean is let's handle this behind the scenes until it's been confirmed. Is that
It's two different things. I mean, the idea of due process is really important. We know that allegations of wrongdoing can be very harmful to the person on the receiving end. But we also know, as we've been talking about, how hard it is to come forward with allegations of abuse, how often abuse takes place in private, how much societal biases have tilted toward not believing the person making the accusations, leaving many people say that they feel doubly victimized when they come forward. So we have to balance two really important competing interests, which are really hard. So the idea of slander or libel, you know, the defamation, that comes into play when someone makes an allegation in response that they've been unfairly characterized. And we know there are plenty of lawsuits where people contend those two issues. But I think what's most important to recognize is that the promise of due process is foundational to our democracy, really. And it means that before a decision is made, whether it's about liberty interests or whether it's about someone's job, that the person making the decision gets the benefit of hearing both sides of the story. And with cases of abuse, it's really important that that decision maker has an understanding of the history and context of domestic intimate partner violence so that they can make a fair judgment about who's telling the truth. We often hear about these cases in terms of one person's word against the other, and that's just the way it is. So a decision maker should be fully informed about what we know about the nature of abuse and how it plays out.
Karen, did you ever feel that way? Did you ever feel like if you decided to go to an attorney or to seek, you know, some other sort of help for this, that you would be, that you wouldn't be believed?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. It's hard to describe how he made me feel because he would just talk and talk and talk until I would understand where he was coming from. And I could see it, you know. They have a way of spinning things and readjusting the way you're thinking to make you really believe what they're saying. When I finally decided to attempt to leave, I had done enough research to know that, I guess basically what's happening here with President Trump saying, you know, you need due process, that when somebody's abusing you, those abuse allegations aren't taken seriously.
Julia, so, have you seen that as well?
Oh, absolutely. And it's been well documented. I mean, another part of the tweet suggested that a single allegation could, you know, cause devastating harm to someone. And certainly in the legal context, I've rarely, if ever, seen that. To the contrary, there are many cases where there are a lot of allegations of abuse, and it could be really hard to be believed.
Thank you, Julie. And Karen, thank you so much for sharing your story with us and hopefully inspiring other women to listen to their gut.
Yes, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Support for The Takeaway comes from Babbel, a language app that teaches real-life conversations in a new language like Spanish, French, and German. Babbel's 10 to 15-minute lessons are available in the App Store or online at Babbel, Babbel.com, by Progressive Insurance, committed to providing efficient tools to enable customers to bundle home and auto insurance. Learn more at Progressive.com or 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. Now that's Progressive. And Staples, offering storage solutions for business, including file folders, banker's boxes, and storage bins for getting organized. More at Staples stores or staples.com. Staples, it's pro time.